Okay, so radio with your family. I'm Hendrik, and I'm coming to you from Cape Town today. I'm sitting here with Lathim Gabriel, and he, of course, is a singer based in Cape Town and wrote and performed the very first Pride song in South Africa for Pretoria Pride 2 years ago. Welcome to KSA Radio, Lathim.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So you've just had a new song come out. It's been some time in the works, and finally it's out, and we've featured it on KSA Radio and given it some airplay. Tell me more about the song, where it comes from.
The song was originally done in my resting genre, which is very indie alternative sort of rock. But I wanted to try something a bit different. So I redid the song. It's called Seed of Unease. And it's essentially a conversation between older and younger self. And it's about trying to address the source of one's issues, I guess, you know, and kind of going back to where it all began, which I found very therapeutic at the time. I think I was going through a period where I needed to have a conversation with my younger self, and I needed to be able to understand, forgive, and let go, and deal with the fears that one carries with one, you know, that gets hardwired into you at a very young age. So that was my inspiration behind the song, and I it was included in my first EP, which I launched in 2017 as well. And then this year I did a retake on it. So I kind of funked it up a little bit, gave it a bit of a dance bed, and it was a really fun process. It was a really fun process. I took my time with it. I wasn't in a rush to release any new music, particularly last year. But it's a piece of work that I'm really proud of, and I'm very happy to put out there.
Is it therapeutic every time when you create a new piece of music, or was this one just that's the process you had to go on for?
No, I think, as an artist, I guess there's always a sense of catharsis when you are particularly writing your own stuff. Artists are just, you know, I think, narcissistic like that. It's always got to be something deep and something meaningful. But I think there's, in terms of the creative process of writing, it's also really fun to just write something that doesn't have deep meaning, something that doesn't speak to a broken soul or a broken relationship. You know, sometimes it's fun to just sit back and just write something that's fun and silly and enjoyable to listen to. And that's something that I've started venturing into myself over the last 2 years, because I was always writing things that was very cathartic and very sort of like confessional and honest and soul exploring. And I think you get bored of it after a while. You really get bored of your own voice, and you get bored of your own process, and this for me was just kind of trying to get out there. I don't think I'll ever be able to completely abandon my style of writing. It's always going to be very sort of stream of conscious, very confessional, very what's the word I'm looking for? Loquacious. Very conversational. But I do enjoy venturing out there and trying new things. I'm currently working on another track, which is very South African house flavored. I've always been a big fan of house music, particularly South African house. And I've always wanted to explore that.
You said you didn't make new music for a while. Why is that?
I didn't make new music for a while because I think I was going through a depression. I think that because 2 years before that, I was working really hard at my craft, and I was seeing quite a lot of gains, and I felt very blessed. But then I think I was burnt out after that. I think last year I was just going through a period of just burnout, and I was exhausted emotionally and mentally, and I needed to recuperate, and I needed to get off social media, and I needed to disconnect from the pressures of trying to be successful at your craft, you know. And then, of course, there was some family stuff as well. There was a lot of family drama, and I just needed to collect myself. So I wasn't putting out any... I was writing a lot of music last year, but a lot of it was a period of self-exploration again. I was exploring different avenues of writing, different styles. But just besides the music, just sitting back and reevaluating my life and the purpose behind it. And I think when you suffer from burnout, no matter what you do, there's a period when I think you just got to sit back and think, is this still what I want to do? Is this still what I love doing? Can I get that passion back for it again? And I think it's important questions to ask yourself, no matter what your art is in life.
So we'd be very keen to know what the answers are to all those questions.
Well, I think well, by virtue of me having released this new song, it's definitely something I still want to do. I'm passionate about music. My father was an artist. He wasn't a singer, but he was a painter. My grandfather was a radio personality back in the day when I think they only had like one frequency. He was a singer as well. So music has always been, music's always been in my family's blood. We have this joke that we somehow related to the Beyoncé Knowles because my family's surname is Knowles. So it's definitely, I'm passionate about music. I think that it's good to sometimes just take a step back and just kind of reevaluate what the meaning of what you're doing is to you, as opposed to what it means to other people. And I think we sometimes make the error of getting lost in the system and we start doing things for other people and we're not doing it for ourselves anymore. And I think that was something that I was struggling with. I felt that I was required to meet a whole bunch of expectations out there, particularly within the South African music context, which has very few avenues.
Mm.
We're not a country that celebrates a wide spectrum of styles of music unless it's international. But when it's homegrown, there isn't a lot of space or room for it.
Isn't that why a number of South African artists are making huge name for themselves outside the country and nobody here knows who they are?
And nobody, I mean, definitely. I mean, if I look at Nakane was doing pretty well for himself, but he was also being blocked in a lot of ways, I think, particularly with, you know, the death threats that came after the documentary. And he was like, and I'm pretty sure this is probably what he was thinking, was like, hey, you know, my own people aren't supporting me, I'm out of here.
Mm.
You know, and he's doing amazing for himself, you know, overseas. And you're absolutely right, Hendrik, that's definitely an inviting option, I think, you know, is to go out there. Because if you don't fit within whatever's trending at the moment, then it's really difficult for you as an artist if you are outside of a different genre. Which brings me to a long-standing issue that I've had with radio stations, is that I feel that they have a certain responsibility, a certain social responsibility to listeners. I understand the reality so that you've got to, you know, you've got to get your listenership up. And this is what the listeners want to hear, so this is what you're going to play them. But my philosophy is that if you keep feeding someone the same thing, that's all they're going to know what to eat, you know. And I think that I think that radio platforms, music platforms, I think they have a responsibility to give people credit, you know. Give people credit that maybe they are interested in listening to something else if you just give them a chance. You know?
Isn't that what the internet's doing, though? Is it's freeing us from those old spoon-feeding ways of,
yeah,
this is what you're listening to, this is,
yeah,
what you're watching. And we now take that power back, going, I'm going to choose what I watch.
God
on Netflix,
bless internet radio, you know, because they don't have those kind of pressures, I think. And I think they have a lot more freedom to support different kinds of genres and artists.
So would you also use the internet to try and infiltrate the rest of the world and see?
Definitely. I think the internet is a powerful tool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even normal radio stations, lack of a better term. Even they have online streaming platforms.
Mm.
So the internet is definitely the space you want to be in when you're doing this sort of thing, you know. And it's great because if you've got an artist profile up there or a personality profile up there, you can just link really, really easy to all these different online streaming platforms to play your music. So it's definitely the way to go.
Where are you going next? What is your plan now to get this music career up and running again?
Well, it was always running, Hendrik. Well, it was just taking a slight sojourn.
Well, you know, that means it was on pause for a while. So you got to press play
it
again.
It was on pause for a while, it was. But I'm excited more than ever now to be back in the ring. And I've networked with some great South African talent. I had a really wonderful time at Pride. I seem to be becoming the poster boy for Pride in South Africa. I wasn't going to do, just on a side note, I wasn't going to do Pride this year. I said, oh God, no, I did Pride the last 3 years. I'm doing it this year. And then Matthew van Us called me, the director of Pride, and he's like, what would Pride be without you, Ladim? And I felt so strong-armed. I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it. Yeah, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I got to hang out with Craig Lucas, and I got to hang out with Jimmy Nevis, and I even had Jared Rickards coming backstage, and it was a lot of fun. It was great fun. I bumped into you, mm-hmm. you know, so it was great. So where am I going with this now? Right. So I'm literally taking it each step at a time. I'm not planning too far ahead in the future. I've realized since my burnout, and I think the reason that I can identify and am so sensitive to burnout is because I worked in the NGO sector for close to 10 years. And 10 years is a long time to be in the NGO sector. I mean, they have such a huge turnover rate because of burnout, you know, it's real. So at this point, I'm taking it one step at a time. I'm happy to have released this new single, which I've gotten a bit of exposure for. It's also going to be playing in every single Pep stores across the SADC region, which I'm really chuffed about. And I've got after Ramadan, I've got a jazz event that I'm doing on the 7th of June. It's at the Odemolen Eco Village, and it starts from about 3 o'clock. So check that out on social media. It's called the Sundowners Jazz Event at the Odemolen Eco Village in Pinelands. And then we'll just see, we'll take it from there. I mean, I'm constantly making new music all the time. I'm very excited to be recording again this new song that I'm doing. And I will just, yeah, keep everybody updated about what's happening and things like that.
If people want to get the song, where do they go?
Well, the song is available on iTunes. It's available on Google Play. It's available on most major platforms. But it'll be available in about a week or so. Yeah. So iTunes has this thing where they take like forever to process your music and audit it and eventually like give it a stamp of approval. So give it a week. It'll be available on all the major platforms.
I'm here in Cape Town, sitting here with Lathine Gabriel. And it's tomorrow, the middle of Ramadan.
Yes, that is correct.
And I never knew that in the middle of Ramadan, there's some function planned.
In the middle of Ramadan, on the 15th day of fast, traditionally we call it Buba night. So for those who don't know what Buba is, it's a kind of warm pudding that looks like milk. But it's got vermicelli in, and it's got sago in, and some cinnamon, and it's made with like rose water and milk, and it's just really delicious. Google it, it's Buba, B-O-E-B-A. And so we have what we call a mass iftar. So an iftar is essentially just the breaking of one's fast in the evening. So we have a big one, a mass one. We invite like a whole bunch of people, community comes, you know, and we all just sit and we break fast together and we have this community spirit going on and it's great. Yeah.
So this is what Ramadan is all about, is it?
Ramadan is about a lot of things. Ramadan is, in my opinion, Ramadan is about community. It's about self-sacrifice. It's about empathy. It's about getting into the shoes of somebody who doesn't have the everyday distractions of food and water, you know, that we have. It's about reconnecting with one's creator, one's sense of higher self. It's about detoxing on a physiological level. It's about detoxing, and it's a challenging experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about willpower and getting up really early in the morning.
So that kind of throws your whole month around there.
It throws you completely out there, I tell you. I mean, some mornings you're on autopilot and you're just making breakfast. Yeah, but it definitely throws you out. But I think it's great. You know, I think there's fast in, if I understand correctly, in different kinds of religious systems. You know, over the ages, there's been a different kind of version of fasting for everyone. People even do it, I think, just to detox. It's not even necessarily for religious purposes. Mm-hmm. But I generally enjoyed having my iftars at the Masjid al-Khurba, which formerly ran as the Inner Circle, which is an LGBTI safe space for queer Muslims. And we come together during Ramadan. We come together every Friday for mosque. And we also break fast together. Yeah.
I was going to say, this is kind of weird, sitting in a space that is traditionally very anti-LGBT and exclusionary, as most religions seemingly are, and to be able to sit here and go, well, this is an inclusive space. And you also said it's kind of a split-off of Inner Circle that this started.
Okay, so when one thinks of homosexuality and Islam, I think the words that come to mind are irredeemably oppressive. But, oh, it's such a strange journey it's been for me. So my dad was Muslim. My mom was Christian, and they were married ecumenically like that for close to 20 years. And we all grew up Christians. There was no pressure in our household to be either or, you know, and the choice was ours. And that's how my parents chose to raise us. When I was in my early 20s, I embraced Islam because I was really close to my dad's side of the family. I was also very fascinated by the religion itself. And I was always drawn to my dad's faith. And eventually it just seemed like a natural thing for me to do. So my introduction, thankfully, into Islam was, I think, any orthodox avenue I had chosen would not have accepted my sexual orientation. It was going to have to be a queer space that was going to accept my sexual orientation and appreciate the need for one's sense of spirituality as well. You know, if that's something that you value, if having a connection with your creator is something you value, then it would have needed to be a space that accommodated that. And so I did. I found it through the Inner Circle many, many moons ago. And I developed a relationship. I got to see a side of Islam that was compassionate, you know, contrary to what the media is showing us and what the world is telling us, you know, and what the Americans are trying to impose on us, is that Islam is a compassionate religion and there's room for everyone. And if we focus on the good things, you know, if we take our egos out of this vehicle we call religion, whether it's Christianity, Judaism, whatever you want to call it, if we can just remove our egos from it and just focus on the qualities that it's trying to instill in us, like compassion, mercy, love, acceptance, inclusion. I think all religions teach this. But because it's always being interpreted by the ego, and might I add the ego of me, you know, it's always going to be interpreted askew, and it's always going to be exclusive, and it's always going to deny and reject and oppress. And I mean, if religion was interpreted by women, do you honestly think that they would have chosen to be oppressed in certain kinds of cultures and societies? I don't think so. I don't think so. Or if it was interpreted by a gay guy, you know, there would have been the stoning of homosexuals. No, I don't think so. It's always an agenda. It's always a masculine agenda that's interpreting religious vehicles. And I tried to have this conversation with a guy a couple of weeks ago. And I kept saying, so do you realize that throughout history, it's always been men that's caused, you know, crap. I really wanted to say something stronger. And he's like, yes, but those were a long time ago, and you know, this was a long time ago, and it doesn't make sense today, and whatever. And I'm like, yes, but just listen to what I'm saying. It's always been men that's been causing this nonsense in the world with the interpretation of everything. And eventually he sort of got it. So I don't think it's a conversation that guys, men in general, are having with themselves. That there's a fundamental problem with the way that men are interpreting aspects of life. You know, I mean, look at politics. Politics isn't politics. Politics is personal. It's always been personal. What Putin is doing, what Trump is doing, you know, it's always been personal. The personal is the political, the micro eventually becomes the macro, and everything is just being translated, you know, and affecting the rest of us. So, and again, it's men that are making these crazy, crazy ass decisions. It's just ridiculous, and it's all ego-driven, and it's all arrogance, and it's all fear. It's fear of not having control.
That's what it's all about in the end, isn't it?
Control. It is. It's fear of not having control, and that's what it's all about. And yeah, oh, I could go on and on and on about these things, but yeah.
But this is a safe, inclusive space.
This is a safe, inclusive space. Well, it's queer run, and it's queer maintained, and it's queer inclusive. It's not a gay space. It's a space that is inclusive of the LGBTI community. Anybody's welcome to come and pray here. Anybody's welcome to come and celebrate here. And I think we need more spaces like this, you know. I know that it seems as if we're moving into this age of awareness, where people are moving away from the frivolous notions of God and religion and spirituality, and science can explain everything. And that's fine, you know, whatever floats your boat. But I think there's still fundamental issues that human beings are dealing with that there are no answers for. And sometimes it helps to be able to look outside yourself. Sometimes it helps to be able to believe in something bigger than you that can carry you through challenges and struggles. And then we look at people that are suffering from severe loneliness, you know, suicide rates are going up. People who are suffering from aggression and violence and abuse and inflicting it. And you wonder, where is this coming from? Where is all of this coming from? And I think that there is a fundamental lack of spirituality in people's lives. And I'm not trying to be prescriptive, and I'm not trying to say that, you know, one size fits all, but seeing what I've seen and observing what I've observed over the course of my life, I think that there is something to be said for a sense of spirit. No matter what you want to call it, no matter how you want to identify it, if we call it an inner voice, call it a deeper sense of consciousness, whatever you want to call it. But I think that there's a lack of awareness around that within people. And that's why the world's going crazy.
And also if marginalized people who are already on the sidelines are being pushed further out by religion, then certainly people are being sort of denied that spirituality and access to that spirituality.
Exactly. So the space was initially conceived for queer Muslims who felt that they had to choose, right, between their faith or their natural sort of state of being, you know, their attraction to other women or other men or same sex. And the space was conceived to allow them to be both. Mm. You can be both, you know, it doesn't have to be either or. So it's because the result is always the same. Queer Muslim guy or girl eventually ends up getting married or living a life of perpetual self-induced guilt. You know, because there is no reconciliation for them between their sexual identity and the spirituality and the religious vehicle that they grew up with. It's part and parcel of their identity. And it's basically asking someone to split yourself in two, you know. And spaces like this allow you to be all of who you are without judgment, without fear of backlash, without critique, negative critique, you know, so... I hope that answers your question.
That was the first part of the question, wasn't it? The second part was, how did this organization come about? And can I then add a third part to it? Have you had backlash from the community? Mm.
This organization started back in... Well, it started before I... I wasn't along from the very inception. It started, I think, back in 1998. It started out in Joburg, out of Imam Muhsin Hendrik's garage. It started out as a support group for queer Muslims. To basically just come together and talk about what life is like being queer and Muslim, you know. Hi, my name is, and I am a Muslim. It started out like that, and then it just sort of took a life of its own, and it grew into what the community needed at the time, the queer community, and they needed more from the support group, and then it grew to accommodate that, and eventually in 2006, it got established as the Inner Circle, and it opened its doors in Wynberg. And it had operated out of there up until 2017. It then underwent an identity change where it went from the Inner Circle and started operating as the Al-Fitra Foundation. And I think it operated like that up until 2018, where it then underwent hierarchical structural changes and all of this stuff and, you know, just office politics and whatever. But anyway, suffice to say that they eventually split. So Al-Fitra Foundation still runs, and they still run some of their basic programs, self-help programs, essentially. And then Imam Muhsin also has another foundation now called Al-Gurba Foundation, which essentially works on the same principle. So it's a lot of, like, workshops around reconciliation for sexual identity and religion, counseling sessions. It offers counseling sessions, and it runs, of course, the weekly mosque space as well for Friday Jumas. Yeah, and of course, there was a lot of backlash in the initial stage. I mean, Muhsin was the first imam ever, I think, in South Africa to come out. And there was a huge backlash. And this was even before the organization itself was officially established. But I'm sure if you have him on your show, he can explain all of that to you. But working at the Inner Circle when I did, so I was doing communications and media for them. We got a lot of backlash. I mean, we once had a truck a bucky pull up outside the gates and all these men had guns on them, you know. Thankfully, they couldn't get inside the security gates. But it was crazy, yeah. And that was during a same-sex wedding ceremony.
Oh, my God.
So this poor girl's wedding was ruined, you know, and it was her own family. So there was, was a huge backlash we faced already. We used to get death threats now and then. I think if we'd been in any other part of the world, I think it probably would have been a lot worse. But because Cape Town's such a laid back, I think people are even too lazy to to protest against something. It would have been worse. So, but I mean, suffice to say, we did get a couple of death threats. And we've tried engaging with the mainstream Muslim community many times. And it took a long time, but I think that there is, especially in Cape Town, there's a culture of tacit acceptance. So as long as you're not rocking the boat too much, I think there's a sense of... Because look, gay people are culturally a part of Capetonian history, you know? And it's a rich, rich history. So we've always been there. I think we've always been seen as the Los Leivach, scandalous, effeminate type, you know? Home-wrecking morphies, so to speak. But that's all changed, you know? That's all changed. So we've always been there. In some way, to some degree. And we've always been accepted into the community in some way. So there's always been this tacit acceptance of homosexuality, I think, even within the Islamic community in Cape Town. But then you will, wherever you go, you'll find your extremists, you'll find your fundamentalists, you know. But we've held out through it, you know. I mean, it's been a crazy journey, but I mean, thank God we're still alive. Nobody lost their lives. And if I dare say that we've actually warmed the hearts over the years to the intolerant. Mm. You know, I think anything in life can be solved with a conversation. I think we're too quick to react. We're too quick to get angry and jump on our soapbox, you know, and be right. When I think that it really just takes a conversation between you and someone that's different to get to a better understanding of things.
Well, if you want to have a conversation with this organization, you can go to their website. It's called compassioncenteredislam.net, and there's little colons between all of them. Not colons, what do you call that? Dashes, what is it? Compassion-centered-islam.net. Go and have a look if you are interested and maybe even joining up in Cape Town. And we're going into Friday, but Ramadan is obviously, it's not a party time for... You know, for you guys, surely you take time out from this and get back to hedonistic life, if there is such a thing.
All things in moderation. You know?
So,
no judgment.
Tell me about Cape Town and its nightlife, and it seems to be very gay, and there seems to be a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Much more so than Joburg, as far as I'm concerned.
You think so? I think there's a difference, though. I think that Cape Town centralizes its gay village.
But that is the thing, because in Joburg, right, you have to drive to Pretoria or you have to drive to bloody wherever.
Which I actually thought was better, because when I was living in Joburg and everything was spread around, it kind of meant that whether you were queer or not queer, you were all going to end up in the same place eventually, right? And so I thought that was pretty cool. Although I did live in Melville, which was kind of very gay. Yeah. So
that also changed so much. I mean, all those venues have closed down.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Oba, all those places are closed down.
Oba's closed?
Oh, forever. Oh. For years now. And there's very few places left to go to. Whereas in Cape Town, it seems like you turn the corner and there's another either gay-friendly or a gay place.
But that, no, see, that's in the city.
That's in the city
bowl,
of course, in City
Bowl.
Yeah.
That's in the city. So they used to have a gay village in the city, which was in Greenpoint. And they had a whole block. Like, this whole block was gay, right? They had your leather bars. You had your teeny popper bars. You had your, you know, all your different, your twink bars and your drag houses. And they had all of that stuff. And I think over the years, they kind of spread out. So it's not concentrated anymore. It's sort of spread out all over. So now you've got gay establishments kind of spread all over the city area. We don't have that village anymore, which I kind of miss, because that was my introduction to...
Yeah, you used to go down to Greenpoint and you would park your car and you would go from one place to the next.
Yeah, or my bus. I would park my bus.
You bring out a load of people with you, obviously.
And yeah, I mean, Old Bronx was one of the oldest gay clubs in
that is so sad. Is there Mr. Price there now? What is on that corner?
It's a spa.
A spa.
Yeah, it's a spa. Mm. Yeah, I mean, the gay scene's changed, I think.
How has it changed? Has Grindr changed it? Has the fact that there's no gay village
chat. God, I hate Grindr. Oh, I hate Grindr. So hard.
The logistics involved in that sometimes, hey?
I'm telling you.
You have to get out of bed.
I don't know when last I actually met someone off Grindr. I think at this point in my life, if I'm not rolling out of bed and literally like into the arms of someone else, I'm not leaving my house. I'm not Ubering to you. I'm not even... No. Well, maybe it's just because I've just been on the dating scene for so long. But I think it's changed. I think it's changed a lot. I don't think there's a sense of community anymore. There used to be a sense of community before we had all these freedoms, you know. There was a much...
Because we were persecuted. We had to...
Yeah, we had to stick cower together.
In the corner together, yeah, and do all sorts.
Yeah, and now that we've got all these freedoms, which I'm not saying is a bad thing. Please don't... listeners, do not read into that. I'm just saying that it's become almost less of a community experience. You know, we don't talk about things that are affecting us as gay people anymore. And we don't support each other the way we should, I think. You know, we don't offer spaces to support each other.
And that's the one of the downsides of mainstreaming gay issues now, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, I can say that the transgender movement and reality has definitely flourished. There was definitely an aspect of the LGBTI spectrum that even gay people didn't completely understand. You know, we didn't know how to relate to transgender people for a very long time. You know, we were in the dark as anyone else. And I definitely think that that's taken on, that's been a powerful, it's taken on an educational life force of its own. And it's completely mainstreamed now. You see it in movies. You see it. You see transgenderism in television. It's crazy. I mean, Bold and the Beautiful is even sporting, you know, transgendered people. And it's even in cartoons. I discovered last weekend, I was in Hermanus, and I discovered that they have transgender cartoon characters. I was blown away. But yeah, I mean, I'm not really one for clubbing. I think I kind of lost interest in clubbing a while ago, a good couple of years ago. I just generally sort of stick to my usual spots, you know, where everybody knows your name and you feel comfortable and that sort of thing. But then, strangely enough, if the further deep south you go, the more kind of things change. So there's this thing in Cape Town where we believe that the deep south is a really, it's kind of like Twilight Zone. It's kind of like picket fences, man. The deeper south you go, the crazier things get, man, in terms of laws of reality start to alter. But living in the deep south, you don't have these distinctions. I never noticed distinctions between gay people and straight people on a stripped down social level, man. I mean, people don't identify necessarily as gay or straight or whatever. There's a sense of inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived there for a good couple of years and I loved it, you know. People were engaging with each other on human levels, you know. It was real, it was human. And sexuality was fluid. Nobody was really sort of identifying as either or. They were really just kind of going with the flow, you know what I'm saying? Which isn't necessarily a good thing on a Friday night. But yeah.
But it seems that the word queer is very much used down here as opposed to any other word that I've encountered. I mean, we talk about gay issues and trans and whatever, but people seem to be very happy under the umbrella of being queer and whatever that means.
I think that happened when I wasn't looking. I dropped the ball there. But I think we started to reinvent the word or re-own the word. There's a word I'm looking for and I can't get to it.
Reclaim it.
Reclaim the word.
Because it was a dastardly thing to say to somebody.
Yes, it's
when
queer.
I was small, queer was a horrible thing.
And I think we just started reclaiming it. I think the organization started reclaiming it, the LGBT organizations in Cape Town, and we started using it as an umbrella term. And it seems
it's easier to say than LGBT.
Oh God, the alphabet.
Get lost somewhere. I have no idea what letter comes next.
That alphabet, jeez, it's ever growing. I can't imagine. I don't know what other letters they're going to add in there. Veggie sexual, autosexual.
So where do you go then if you were to go out on a typical night?
I generally don't go to the city. I think the city is too noisy. There's too many lights and there's too much movement. So I end up going deep south. So I'll end up in like Fishhook, Cork Bay, Muizenberg. I love being by the ocean. And I'll have a chilled evening there with some friends and stuff, you know. You can always go and park at the beach. You can go play a game of pool. And like I said, you know, people are really friendly and really welcoming that side. That's why I love it down there so much. And you can just have a conversation with anybody, and anybody's willing to talk about anything with you. It reminds me a lot of Joburg spaces, which was one of the things I really liked about Joburg, is that you could strike up a conversation about anything with anybody and people would have an opinion. You know, it's not, it's, you don't get this vacant sort of automated response when you mention something important, you know, to someone randomly.
And do you think Cape Town is the pink capital of Africa?
Is it the pink capital? I think it needs to live up to its name a little bit more. I do. I think it has a responsibility to live up to its name as the pink capital. Because it's not just about parties and it's not just about the fun, you know. It's about other things as well. And for some reason, it's always pride that sort of like offers the opportunity, like once a year, to have this awareness about the other issues, you know. And meanwhile, you've got other organizations during the year who are trying to raise awareness. But I think these kind of things should be happening, and call me, like, yes, I am an activist to the core, but and you can call me militant, I don't care, right? But I think spaces like clubs, for example, you know, clubs, queer restaurants, queer businesses, you know, queer private owned businesses, I think they should also create some sort of awareness around social issues within those spaces. Look, I mean, gay people are coming out younger and younger these days, right? They have boyfriends and girlfriends on school. I never had that.
You're too petrified to even look.
Exactly. And where are they going to be amongst their own people? They're going to clubs, right? And this is the introduction into queer life. It can be cold, it can be violent, it can be incompassionate, and it will spit you out, mm-hmm. you know, when the liquor license comes to an end.
4:30.
So, 4:30. So I think these spaces, we can't change them. We're going to change that in a day, you know. But these spaces, I think, should take some sort of social responsibility in creating awareness around things. For example, have a couple of pamphlets out there to places where you can deal with your identity. You know, have a couple of pamphlets, have some brochures, you know, have some posters up in the bathrooms. We all know that we're spending most of our time in the toilets in those clubs. So have your posters up there and do that little bit to create awareness, because it's more than just, I mean, yes, it's fun. We forget about the problems and stuff when we are parting. But we're going home back into those spaces again, where we are being oppressed and we are being devalued. And I think that if we can just create some sort of support structures within these private-owned businesses, like clubs, for example, I think it would make such a difference. Mm. I honestly do.
There we go. We've solved all the issues. Gays, mate.
Yeah, Levine for president.
You just missed the ball. Sorry. There we go. Well, it's always good things to happen in Cape Town. Lots of places to go to, lots of things to see. So come and join us and come do some spotting and see if you can spot Lathim in some famous bar or somewhere.
And connect with me. Connect with me, Kanala.
Yes. There you go.
So Lathim, I know a lot of people have trouble saying my name. So when I do shows now, I generally make people say my name by syllable. Lathim. So I'll make them repeat it a couple of times, because I've gotten some crazy feedback. You know, it's love him, it's Lathim, it's Lucine, it's all kinds of stuff. So grab me on social media, guys. Lathim Gabriel. It's LathEem. Lathim. And let's connect. Yeah.
There we go. And of course, your music is on Gayser Radio. Remind us of the name of the song.
Seed of Unease.
Seed of Unease. Mm. It is there. You can listen to it right here on Gayser Radio, where you are family.